Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood, featuring the regular Good News gang and our special guest, Camel Cigarettes number one salesman, Eddie Cantor. In addition, we are presenting as a special feature a birthday party in honor of Lionel Barrymore. And here is your host for the evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, Warren, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I know you're all going to enjoy the extraordinary program we have for you tonight, in the course of which you will hear a half a dozen of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's greatest stars paying their personal tribute to a man I know all of you admire, too, Lionel Barrymore. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is your guest of honor for this evening, the one and only Eddie Cantor.
Thank you.
We're certainly happy to have you with us, Eddie. And since you're going to make a picture for us at MGM, we consider you one of the family.
It's an honor. I'm happy to be on your program because I like it so much. And besides, I'm crazy about birthday parties.
Oh, you like birthday parties.
Yeah, it's nice to know that somebody besides me gets a year older every year. You know what I mean, don't you?
Yes, I think I get it. Tell me, Eddie, have you congratulated Lionel Barrymore?
No, not me. I'm afraid. I can just picture Lionel saying, I don't want to be congratulated. Why does everybody have to remind me that I'm 61 years of age? I expected applause, so help me, I did. I let it go, all right. But honestly, no. We need the time for the commercials. But I really think he's grand, Bob, and he has a right to roar. After all, isn't he the MGM Lionel? All over.
Well, proceeding as though there had been no low comedy interruption, I've often wondered, Eddie, why MGM has never cast you and Lionel Barrymore together.
Oh, Bob, they're too smart. After all, why should they put two great dramatic stars in one picture? Waste of money, all that kind of stuff, you know?
Certainly, Eddie, I'd like to work in a picture with you again. The last time we were together was in The Kid from Spain.
That's right, back in 1932.
That's right. Remember the day we were shooting the bullfight scene? How the bull jumped over the fence and chased you down Hollywood Boulevard?
I'll never forget it.
Was that bull mad at you?
Well, he certainly wasn't after my autograph. But honestly, Bob, that picture really wore me out.
Well, I guess you got over it all right, Eddie, because you certainly look fine now.
I feel good, too. I'm really in great shape. I've got to be. I've been in training, you know.
Training? For what?
You don't know? You don't know Robert Young what I was in training for? Last Saturday, Dollar Day at the May Company. Oh, yes. The best part of my life I spent Saturday in the May Company's basement. Honestly, every woman in Los Angeles was there.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't want to knock women, because after all, my wife is a woman, you know.
Oh.
But I'll tell you, they'll buy anything that's marked with a 98. $4.98, it's a riot. $1.98 is a panic. But when they see 98 alone, massacre. There I massacre.
Eddie, those price tags are positively dangerous.
Dangerous? Why, one of those $1.98 price tags got caught in my lapel while I was waiting for my change. A little kid looked at the price tag, looked at me, and hollered, Mama, buy me that big Popeye. It's less than $2.
That must have been embarrassing.
Well, I didn't mind the kid calling me Popeye and thinking I'm a toy, but when the sales lady tried to wrap me up, that was going too far. Still, I wasn't the only one having trouble. There was one poor old guy in the crowd who had his toupee knocked off. He bent down, picked up a Pekingese by mistake, and slapped it on his head. A woman said, Say, mister, you're wearing my Pekingese. And he said, No, madam, this is my toupee. And she answered, Well, if it is, one end of your toupee is barking and the other end is wagging your tail. How do you like an old man like that putting on the dog? Oh. It gets worse.
Well, Eddie, being in one of those bargain basements must be awful.
Getting out is even worse. I was exactly 1 hour fighting my way through the revolving doors when a lady with her arms full of bundles said to me, Will you push the door for me, Sonny? Imagine me, Bob. Sonny, she called me. Sonny. I said, Sonny? Lady, I'll have you know I'm the father of 5 girls. She said, Would you mind repeating that? And I said, Not if I can help it.
All right. right, Eddie, enough of this comedy. Pardon the exaggeration.
Thank you.
What would you like to sing?
Well, it isn't what I'd like to sing. May I do something vocally for Lionel Barrymore?
What, Eddie?
Something old, something new, something borrowed and something new.
That's what Eddie Cantor sings for you.
Sunday clothes, my best girl. Just like Queen Rosie, old lady. She's just a sweet little lady. Why she calls me up now and then, calls me down only when I'm too smart. Since we've been acquainted, the church is newly painted. I know the preacher was wise from the start. What a pal, what a gal, just the sweetest frivolous pal, my best girl.
And here's something new for you.
Heaven can wait. This is paradise, loving the way we do. Until I go there with you, heaven can wait.
Something old, something new, something borrowed from you.
I'll tell you who. It's not Mr. Strauss, either Oscar or Johan, but a fellow from Broadway, George M. Cohan. Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang at 42nd Street that I will soon be there. Whisper of how I'm yearning to mingle with the old-time throng. Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there.
Back again, appearing in a dramatic play. Yes, a dramatic play later in the program. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Snooks and Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, are returning from a few days in the country with Mother and the baby. It is very late at night as they reach home and step out of the car. Listen.
Are you home, Daddy?
Yes. What a horrible drive. Now, don't make any noise.
Why?
Because it's past midnight and you'll disturb the neighbors. Come on. I've got to get you right to bed.
I ain't sleepy, Daddy.
Well, I am. I have to go to work in the morning.
Why?
I've been asking myself the same question for 15 years.
Don't you like to work, Daddy?
Like to work? Like to work? Why, I love it.
Now you don't.
Just the same, we've got to get some sleep. I've got to go to work, and you've got to go to school.
I know what, Daddy.
What?
Let's both play hockey.
Look,
Never let me hear you say a thing like that again. The very idea.
Wish I had the nerve to take her up on it.
Nothing. Now, watch your step. It's awful dark here. Now, where's my door key? Uh-oh. It's gone.
Who's the matter, Dave?
I've driven 200 miles. It's after midnight, and now I can't get into my house. Isn't that wonderful?
You like it?
No, I don't like it. We've got to get into this house.
Ring the bell, Daddy.
Ring the bell? Oh, don't be silly. There's nobody home.
Yes, there is.
Now, listen. We're both outside, and Mummy and the baby are still in the country. Now, who could be in the house?
Mrs. Flitch.
What would Mrs. Flitch be doing in this house?
She lives here. We live next door.
Are you Holy smokes. It is the wrong place at that. Why do they build these houses all alike?
It's cheaper.
Come on. Quick, before the old battle axe wakes up.
Mommy, some ice cream.
Ice cream? Now, I'm warning you, Snooks. You'd better not start that ice cream stuff tonight.
I'm warning you, Daddy. You better buy it.
What?
Now, where's Mrs. Flitch? And I'll tell her. She said she was an old battleship.
Come away from there. You little vagrant. Take your finger off that bell.
Will you buy me some ice cream?
Oh, yes.
What kind?
Any kind. Any kind at all.
Vanilla?
Yes.
I don't like vanilla.
No, please. Now, listen, Daddy's dog tired. Take your finger off that bell and come with me. I won't be angry with you.
All right, Daddy.
I still don't know how we'll get into our house. I'll probably have to try and force a window.
I'll break it with a rock, Daddy.
Put that rock down. You'll wake up the whole street. Now, wait a second. Let me get the flashlight out of the car. What are you crying about?
I don't know.
Oh, you're just sleepy, darling. Now, I'll have you in bed in a minute. Here we are. Now, hold this flashlight. I'll try and get the front window open.
All right. Daddy!
Keep quiet. Oh, pretty solid.
I want some ice cream.
Oh, listen, Snooks. There's some ice cream left in the icebox. And if you promise not to talk, I'll give you some.
How much?
You'll get your share. Just hold that flashlight and don't talk.
All right.
Oh, I'll have to break this catch. I can't open it. Maybe I can.
All right, buddy. Get out off that window.
Huh? Hello, officer.
Never mind that hello stuff. I got you covered. Trying to break in, huh?
Oh, but I live here, officer.
A likely story.
Well, of course I do. Ask the child.
What about a kid? This guy live here?
I ain't talking.
Why not?
He told me not to.
Oh, pretty smart. Breaking them in young, eh, Fagin?
Fagin? Oh, what is this? Now, you look here. My name is Higgins. This is my daughter, and we both live in this house. I have forgotten my door key, that's all. Isn't that right, Snooks?
I ain't talking.
You can tell the policeman, Snooks. Forget what I said before.
What did he say before?
He said, I'll get my share if I don't talk.
Splitting the loot, eh? Come along with me, the pair of you.
Oh, what are you talking about, splitting the loot? I promised her a share of ice cream if she kept quiet.
Brother, that's the best one yet for a second story man. Ice cream.
Funny, ain't it?
Now, this is gone far enough.
Shock him, Daddy.
Shut up! Now, look here, officer.
I had my eye on you for the last 10 minutes while you were trying to break into this house.
We haven't been here 10 minutes, have we, Snooks?
No, he was trying to get in next door.
Oh. Reckon 2 joints in one night, huh? Come on, I'll call the wagon.
Yeah, call the wagon.
You keep your hands off me. I can prove I live here. Now, here's my card and my automobile license. Now, look at them.
Well, that's the name and address, all right. But how do I know you live here? Maybe you pinched the wallet.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Snooks, please tell the policeman, do we live in this house?
No.
What? Snooks, why do you say that?
Because I want to ride in the wagon.
Oh, you see, officer, the child is just being contrary.
Mary, quite contrary.
Oh, stop that. Tell the policeman who we are. Tell him who we are.
Ain't that funny, Daddy?
Ah, yeah. Well, you look all right to me, Mr. Higgins. Guess I can take a chance to let you go.
Oh.
Need any help?
Oh,
No thanks, officer. I'll manage to get in.
Well, good night.
Good night. Pot-bellied flatfoot.
You say something, Mr. Higgins?
Nothing at all. Good night, officer.
Wait till I get you inside. First, I've got to get this darn window open.
Daddy.
Now, listen, you. This time, I really mean it. If you say one more word till we get in the house, I'll pan you good.
But
you heard me. Not one more word till we get in the house. I'm going to break the window. There. Now, stay there while I climb in.
Oh! Why did she have to put that vase by the window? That broken down dope?
All right, come on in, Stokes.
Can I talk now, Daddy?
Yes, what is it?
The key is under the doormat.
Why didn't you tell me before? Well, what are you yelling about? I didn't thank you.
But you will.
You're darn right I will.
Warren, it's time for your words to the wise.
Yes, Bob, it is. But instead of talking, I want to show you something that happened to a friend of mine the other day. It might happen in anybody's home. Listen.
Why, Jim, where are you going, dear? You haven't finished your dinner.
Yes, I have. I'm going to read the evening paper.
Oh, but Jim, dear, you haven't even finished your coffee. I know you've had a lot of business worries on your mind, but really, Jim, you mustn't neglect your health. Oh, come on, sit down and finish your coffee.
Martha, to tell you the truth, I don't like this coffee we're having. It seems so flat and tasteless.
Well, next day, Martha's friend Ellie came in and heard all about it. And Ellie said...
Well, I don't know, Martha. Maybe he's right. You're not much of a coffee drinker yourself, you know. Maybe he's been getting good coffee somewhere downtown. Why don't you try serving Maxwell House? The new Maxwell House is wonderful. Rich, smooth flavor.
Gee, that's an idea. I'll go to the store and get some this afternoon.
Gosh, honey, but this is wonderful coffee. Best I've had in months. Hey, let's make this our regular kind from now on. And by the way, sweetheart, how'd you like to go to the theater with your husband tomorrow night?
Now, friends, that's the kind of coffee satisfaction the new Maxwell House is bringing to millions of happy people all over this country. And there's a reason. For not only has the original Maxwell House blend been further enriched, but the wonderful Radiant Roast process roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through. It brings out all the true natural flavor of this superb new blend. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, just get a pound tomorrow. You'll see why so many millions of Americans are saying that the new Maxwell House is now, more than ever, coffee that's good to the last drop.
And now, the MGM Theater of the Air, starring Eddie Cantor in a serious dramatic sketch, especially written for this program by Edward James. It's called First of the Month. At the southernmost part of Manhattan, its edges touching the banks of the East River, lies New York's ghetto. In battered tenements, 100 nations mix. Their voices a babel of strange tongues. Here is true democracy in its finest sense. Every race, every creed, living in meager comforts as Americans. Here is everywhere the first of the month is rent day. So now, as our story opens, we find Eddie Cantor as Mr. Nemo, owner of a shabby tenement, approaching for the not always successful purpose of collecting the rent on the first of the month.
Oh, George. George.
Yes, Mr. Nemo. Morning, sir.
Good morning, George.
A man been around here looking for you.
A man? What did he want?
I don't know what he wanted, but he had on a badge.
Must be the marshal. You see, I haven't been able to meet the installment on my taxes yet.
Yes, sir. Well, maybe you'll collect enough rent money to meet it today, Mr. Nemo.
Maybe. What is it about me, George, that makes people not want to pay their rent? And tell me, has Has anybody come to see the vacant flat?
A couple people come by, Mr. Nemo. But you ain't never gonna rent that place less than you fixes up that sink.
Yeah, I know. Neat painting, too. I'll take care of it as soon as I've got the taxes out of the way.
Well, I'll see you in a few minutes, Mr. Nemo.
Where are you going, George?
Oh, old Uncle Dan in number 5, he's feeling mighty low today. I've gone out to get a bottle of milk for him.
Milk? It'd be better for him if he had some hot soup and maybe a piece of chicken.
Yeah, but a nickel's all the money I got.
Oh, it's your money. Well, here, George, here's a half a dollar. Get him the soup and chicken, huh?
Yes, I'll go straight over there.
Oh, wait, George. You better let me have that nickel. You know, they've canceled my charge account with the subway.
All right, Mr. Nemo. Here he is. Altogether, that makes 75 cents.
Yeah, thank you, George. I'll pay you back out of the first rent I collect. Hello, Jerry. I was just in the building, and I thought...
Could you come back a little later, Mr. Nemo?
Well, I
figured... Jerry! Don't go away!
All right, honey. Some other time, please, Mr. Nemo. I can't think straight. Come back some other time.
Is something the matter?
No, it's all right.
Jerry! Don't go away, Jerry!
Is your wife sick?
Well, she's going to have the baby any time now. Gee, I don't know what to do. I sent for Dr. Miller, and he should be here now.
Oh, I thought it was the doctor. Hello, Mr. Nemo.
Hello, Mrs. Lewis. Is there anything...
No. I'm afraid I'm going to die.
Oh, honey, you mustn't say things like
that. Oh, I don't want to die, but I know I will. I'm not very strong.
Well, no woman is very strong, Mrs. Lewis, and... until she's blessed by the pain of motherhood. And then her strength is so great that big, strong men stand by ashamed of their weakness. You see, the right to have real pain, that is reserved for mothers. It's a very special, exclusive pain. It's too good for men. Well, I've got some business to attend to.
Mr. Nemo.
Yes?
Can I have a word with you? She doesn't know, but... I lost my job today. And is it okay if I don't pay you the rent until I find something?
Why, yes, Jerry. Sometimes there's an excuse for a fellow whose rent is in arrears. But don't let it happen to your courage. It's only the first of the month.
Well, maybe that's the doctor.
Yes, I'll be going now. Goodbye and good luck. Hello, Mrs. Santani. I was just...
Oh, Mr. Landlord, I think you're coming back to some other time. He's much more better. Tony, practice to your violin. So I know practice your neck.
I can't, I tell you. I gotta get out.
What's the matter, Mrs. Santani?
Oh, this boy, he's driving me crazy, I think. Every morning, every night, he's always the same thing. I gotta go out.
Well, I got it. The gang's waiting for
Mrs.
me.
Mrs. Santani.
That's a gang. She's so important. California, bombs. They must not wait, no. But the violin, she can wait. She don't mind, she can wait.
Tony, why don't you do what your mother tells you?
Oh, you'll get your 2 cents out of this, Nemo. What do I want to go scraping that old fiddle for? What's it going to get me?
Well, it might make you famous. Someday, people all over the world might come to hear you play. Isn't that worth working for?
Why? I ain't working for nothing, see? Oh, I got ideas. Yeah, and pretty soon I'm going to step right into some easy dough, see? Huh. Fiddle player.
Well, one can be worse things than a fiddle player, Tony.
No, he's a father. He used to play such a beautiful music.
Yeah. What did ever get him? Nothing. Quit though, that's for me.
Camiseria. A gangster. You hear that, Mr. Landlord? He doesn't want to be a gangster. My little baby.
Tony, I could give you a long lecture about what happens to gangsters and why the life they lead is...
Yeah. Well, you better not.
You shut up and listen to the landlord.
Tony, come here. I want you to look at your mother's hands.
Yeah? I've seen them a million times. So what?
Look at them again, Tony. Don't hide your hands, Mrs. Santani. They're nothing to be ashamed of. Look how worn they are, Tony. Red and rough. Hard work did that. The hardest kind of work. Your mother scrubs floors so that you can eat. So so that you can have a roof over your head. And look how little she asks in return.
Well, what do you think I want the dough for? Don't you think I want to give her everything she wants?
Then why don't you give it to her? She wants you to practice. She wants you to be a musician like your father was before you. You've got it in you, Tony. It shouldn't be too hard.
God,
look, Tony, let's put it this way. On one side, you've got your gang, and on the other side, you've got your mother. Forget what you owe her, your clothes, your food, even your life. And then say to yourself, which one would I miss most, the gang or my mother? Just think about it, Tony.
Gee, it's a fine thing. A guy can't even have a little fun out of life.
Mr. Nemo, come in, come in.
Thank you, Mrs. Solomon. I just stopped by for the rent.
Come in. You'll have maybe a glass of tea with us.
Well, yeah? I don't want to put you in any trouble.
It's not trouble. All my trouble should be like this.
A boy should listen to his elders.
I don't care. I've got a right to my life the way I want to live.
But Milton, Mama and I...
Benny, please. We got company.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. I'm no company. I'm going in a minute.
You'll have a glass of tea, Mr. Nemo, with lemon, maybe, huh? Rosie?
Yes, Mama?
Bring Mr. Nemo a glass of tea. No. Better I go fix it myself. You'll excuse me, please, Mr. Nemo.
Hey, Mr. Nemo, listen. Maybe you'll talk to my Milton.
Why, what's the matter with him?
Oh, you'd think I was a kid. Think I didn't have any brains.
Brains he thinks he has yet. Listen to him. 20 years old, so he wants to get married.
Well, why not? Why shouldn't I get married? People get married every day.
Talk to him, Mr. Nemo. To you, he'll listen. Tell him he's making a mistake.
Well, I don't know. How can I tell him when I don't know what it's about?
Here's the tea, Mr. Nemo. Drink it in good health.
Thanks. Suppose you start at the beginning, Milton.
Well, there's nothing to tell you. I just want to get married, that's all.
Yeah. He's a baby yet, so he wants to get married.
Are you in love?
Am I in love? I get dizzy every time I think of her. I can't sleep thinking about her.
And she's a good girl?
She's everything I ever looked for in a girl. And she's getting such a terrible break. Living all alone like that. Stuck away in a hall bedroom.
An orphan he wants to marry up, Mr. Nemo. A girl without people, without anything.
Who wants anything? I just want to get married and have a home of my own. I've got a right to that much.
Why don't you listen to me, Milton? You want to be like me? In a factory, standing on my feet all day till I think they'll drop off? You should be a lawyer. You should have a profession.
Yeah, and starve like every other young lawyer in town. Sure, that's wonderful.
So can you take care of a wife, Milton?
Oh, I guess so. I've got a job. I'm making money.
Well, you can't just guess, Milton. You have to know. A married man has responsibilities. When the minister makes you one, you've got to start paying for two.
Oh, all right. I make 24 a week. And Jenny makes 14. We can get along on 38 a week, can't we? A lot of people get along on less.
Yes, they do. You know what, Milton? For a wedding present, I'll give you a month's rent free in the vacant flat.
Oh, you will? And you'll fix the sink, too?
Mr. Nemo, you shouldn't talk like that. Milton shouldn't get married, not yet.
Why?
Why? You hear that, Benny?
Sure. Why shouldn't he get married? He's a young man. He's in love. What's wrong with his getting married?
Listen, Mr. Nemo. All our life we made big plans for that boy. We sent him to school. We looked after him. And now?
Yes?
He owes us something.
He should do any day what we want him to do for his own good.
He owes you a lot, Mr. and Mrs. Solomon, but you owe him something, too. You owe him the right to live his own life, to find his own happiness. You're all right, Milton.
Why, to think I should live to see such a day.
Oh, you really think I ought to get married, Mr. Nemo?
I do, Milton. I think you'll be very happy. And I think you'll make your parents happy, too, once they realize that marriage doesn't mean losing a child, but gaining another one.
Oh, gee. Thanks, Mr. Nemo. And did you mean that about the flat?
Of course. I'll tell George about it right away. I never thought I'd have to fix that.
Come in.
Uncle Dan?
Hello, Mr. Nemo. Turn on the light, will you?
Well, we'll have to see that you get better service than this. All alone up here in the dark? There, that's better.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't eat that good soup, did you?
It's kind of you to send it, Mr. Nemo.
Nothing at all.
But I haven't any appetite. Afraid I won't be bothering you very much longer. Or anyone else.
Oh, nonsense. The best years of your life are ahead of you.
No. They're behind me. And long, good years they were. I've lived my life, and I have no regrets. Not many can say that.
That's right. There aren't many, huh?
I can look back a long way. 70-odd years, dear. There's not a single regret in any of them. I had my happiness, full measure of it. Now I'm going to rest.
Maybe I'd better go,
huh? No, I wish you'd stay. Just for a little while, if you have the time. I have visitors so seldom.
Can I do something for you?
There's one thing. It makes me very happy.
Of course. Anything at all.
Over there, right in back of you on the table, is my Bible. Will you read something to me? Just for a little while.
All right, Uncle Dan. Close your eyes and try to sleep, and I'll be right here reading to you. Let's see now. Oh, here. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow. Uncle Dan.
Say, Mr. Nemo, Miss Lewis done had a little baby.
Oh, really?
For Mr. Nemo. Ma says it's okay for Jenny and me to get married. Why, what's the matter?
It's Uncle Dan. I'm afraid he's...
Oh, George. George, let's get Dr. Miller.
Yes.
A single day. Just another day to most folks, and yet... I've seen a whole existence pass before my eyes. Life, marriage, death, right here in my house. And it's only... the first of the month.
Friends, tonight there's a very special celebration going on in Hollywood over on the MGM lot. An elaborate banquet is being held, part of which you will hear soon. We're happy that Maxwell House is playing a part in this banquet tonight, not only because so many of these famous stars have appeared on this program in the last 2 years, but also because Maxwell House has come to be their coffee. At this time, when we observe our Thursday evening's custom, a moment's relaxation over a steaming cup of Maxwell House coffee, these stars are toasting one of the greatest, most beloved American actors, a famous member of a great acting family, Lionel Barrymore, on the eve of his 61st birthday. And so, in honor of this man, perhaps you in your homes would like to join us in a toast to him.
We pause briefly for station identification. KFI, Los Angeles.
Bob Young again, and we continue our Maxwell House Good News program. Meredith Wilson gets us started with a grand number, God's Country. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come.
All right, Bob, you can start the program now.
Start the program? We've been on for 30 minutes. We thought you were lost.
My dear fellow, if I weren't the world's greatest navigator, I wouldn't have got here at all.
Frank, you only sailed in from Catalina. You can roll there in 3 hours.
The lackadaisical remark of a landlubber.
Yeah.
I weighed anchor in the Catalina Harbor at 2 bells this morning. There was a stiff quartering breeze abaft the binnacle and a heavy sea off the starboard bow.
Why didn't you use a spinnaker and hoist a jib boom on the lee side?
I raised my telescope to take an observation. I what did you say?
Were you carrying a balloon jib or a Genoa?
Jib. You don't mean to tell me you know anything about boats.
Poop deck, young sir. The last of a long line of freighters. What do you want to know about boats, Mahardy?
Oh, yes, he knows about boats.
Frank, you ran into a boat expert and you're sunk.
Sunk? Not on your life, boy. The Morgans have always followed the sea, and I'm no exception. I first saw the light of day on the Albany night boat. Mm-hmm. I cut my teeth on a porthole, and at 16 I was master of a full-rigged slop. Mm-hmm. I mean, sloop.
This makes me seasick, but gee, it's interesting.
Yes, well, I spent 30 years at sea, 21 years before the mast.
9 years behind the eight ball.
Listen here, young. You're looking at a man who traversed the Atlantic in a sailboat.
I did it in a canoe.
Canoe? Well, did you ever navigate the Arctic Ocean?
I crossed it on a surfboard.
Surfboard. An Eskimo beach boy. let's see. The Pacific, Sargasso, Mediterranean. The Red Sea. Red Sea! Did you ever sail the Red Sea?
Sail it? I painted it.
Young, you'll soon be ready for a summer program. But don't expect me to listen to it. I'm leaving right now.
Oh, don't go, Frank. I love to hear stories about the sea.
You do? Meredith, you're really very winsome. And at the same time, you're not a total loss. Someday, we're alone, I'll tell you about my briny adventures.
Oh, tell me now, Frank. Don't be scared of Bob.
My rural friend, do you think the childish hecklings of a land-bound weasel can intimidate a man with the blood of Vikings in his veins?
Vikings?
Yes.
2 weeks ago, you told me your ancestors were Scots.
Scots? Yes, well, the Scots were my close relatives. Tracing my family back to the 10th century, we find my famous Viking ancestor, Leif Njorgen. He was one of the original 4 Norsemen.
Who were the other 3?
Well, his brothers, Olaf, Svenska, and Jose. That Jose must have been a ringer. But leave it or not, gentlemen, these intrepid Vikings were responsible for a new epoch in shipbuilding.
What was it, Frank?
Well, they'd made several attempts to sail to India, but the mountainous waves of the North Sea had wrecked their flimsy wooden ships. So they determined to construct a vessel entirely of lead.
That much lead must have cost a lot of tin.
Well, we'll iron that out later.
Oh.
They'll be grabbing me for a summer program, too.
Were your Viking ancestors rich, Frank?
No, but with the boldness and ingenuity that is always the mark of greatness, they obtained their lead by stealing the entire sewer system of the town of Oslo.
Well, how long did it take him to build the boat?
3 years, but it would have been finished sooner had not Olaf been so lazy. While the other 3 boys were plying their tools industriously, Olaf would hang over the front of the boat, lying in a deep sleep.
You do it when you're awake.
I'll bet you're a scream at parties with a lady's hat and a big safety pin.
Never mind him, Frank. Did they get the boat finished?
They finally did, but they gave the figurehead four coats of varnish before they found it was Olaf.
Well, part my hair with a hog leg.
The whole town turned out for the launching, which took place on January 15th in the year 956. Picture that historic occasion. The graceful lions of the Viking ship, 40 tons of lead, polished and gleaming in the sun. With a triumphant flourish, Leif Mjorgen crashed a bottle of old wine across her bows and cries, "I christen thee Smorgasbord."
Huh? Well, that's a pretty name.
Yes. Well, Svenska cut the ropes, and the beautiful craft slid down the ways in the huzzas of the song. A new chapter in man's mastery of the sea.
Well, did they get the Indians safe and sound?
Well, they would have, except for one unfortunate circumstance.
What was that?
Well, as soon as the boat hit the water, it went straight to the bottom of the harbor and was never seen again.
Well, Frank, your ancestors wrote a pretty short chapter in maritime history.
But that was only the first paragraph, my boy. After they were released from the Oslo jail, where they'd been confined on a trumped-up charge of stealing sewer pipes, they built themselves the most invincible ship of the day and became sea rovers.
Oh, boy, pirates.
Yeah.
Wait till I put down my baton.
Well, I can...
Say, Frank, I know a wonderful pirate joke.
Oh,
yeah. Did you know that in olden times they couldn't hang a pirate with a wooden leg?
Why not?
They had to use a rope.
Now we've got a band for the summer program. Shall I go on?
Pray do, Frank, pray do.
Well, Leif became known as the Robin Hood of the sea. Cruising the ocean in his powerful trireme, they plundered the rich and gave the money to the poor. But they became so prosperous that competition was inevitable, and it was then that Ethelbob the Saxon appeared on the scene.
Ethelbob?
Yes. The cruel, cunning sea wolf. He realized the folly of attacking Leif single-handed, so he organized a fleet. In a daring raid on the Spanish coast, Ethelbob captured five armored Spanish galleons, manned them with cutthroats, and set out after the Vikings.
Boy, Leif better look out now.
Well, he was always vigilant. But one morning, just before dawn, while he was on the dog watch, he took a cat nap.
I smell a rat.
Suddenly, the morning fog lifted. Leif opened his eyes and found his ship surrounded by the Cincomata.
Cincomata? What's that, Frank?
Five galleons of Ethelbob.
Shall I check your oil?
No, thanks. I just had a lube job. What am I talking about?
Start the battle, Frank.
Oh, is it? Well, the battle. Well, Leif won and became an explorer. He and his brothers lived to sail the seven seas and charted many a new course until, like all true sailormen and all true Mjorgans, they found happiness in Davy Jones's liquor. I mean, luck.
Frank, that's very interesting, but I don't believe a syllable of it.
You don't have to take my word for it. Just go to the British Museum in London and ask to see the record of Leif Mjorgan's voyage to the BVD Islands.
And where are the BVD Islands, Frank?
In the West Indies. But if you ask to see it, the curator will show it to you under glass. Leif Mjorgen's original log.
What's in the log, Frank?
Termites. Well, so long, fellas. I've got to go and find...
Friends, tonight we have with us a very special guest. She's Mrs. Frances Edwards, head of the commissary and coffee shop on the MGM lot. Mrs. Edwards, you know, is pretty experienced when it comes to making coffee. She serves over 2,400 cups of Maxwell House coffee every day, and the compliments she gets would make any woman happy. Mrs. Edwards, I'm sure everyone would like to hear what you think is the most important thing for getting a good cup of coffee. Won't you tell us?
Well, friends, before you even think of making your coffee, you want to be sure the coffee you buy is good. It must have a rich, full-bodied, satisfying flavor in the blend itself. Then, to make sure you get all this rich, delicious flavor in your cup, it's very important for your coffee to be absolutely fresh. Probably you've often picked a package of some coffee that smells fragrant and delicious. But did you ever stop to think that all that wonderful aroma is really coffee flavor being wasted? Yes, it's flavor no one will ever get in a cup.
That's right, Mrs. Edwards. Because, friends, air steals away coffee flavor. All coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor the moment it's roasted, if exposed to the air. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where air can get at it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half its precious flavor, in only 9 days. Now, that's just why we take the new Maxwell House, still fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven, and seal it in that famous blue super vacuum can. Now, that way, no air can get in, so no flavor can get out. So the rich new Maxwell House comes into your kitchen with all its full-bodied flavor and goodness sealed in, none wasted. Why don't you try a pound of this famous Maxwell House tomorrow? See for yourself what rich coffee flavor, extra full-bodied goodness can mean to your coffee enjoyment. For with the new Maxwell House, you're getting coffee that's not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. And no coffee can be fresher than that.
And now for the big moment in tonight's broadcast. We take you to the banquet stage at the MGM Studios. The next voice you will hear will be that of Robert Taylor. Take it away, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are on stage two, which has been transformed into the magnificence of a gay banquet hall, where tonight the great Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer family, executives, producers, stars, featured players, and directors have all joined in paying birthday tribute to one of its most beloved members, Mr. Lionel Barrymore. The scene before us is a thrilling spectacle of red, white, and blue decorations on the rows of tables at which are seen scores of faces familiar to the motion picture screen. Among the stars are Norma Shearer, Myrna Loy, Clark Gable, Rosalind Russell, Freddie Bartholomew, Robert Montgomery, Joan Crawford, William Powell, Mickey Rooney, Hedy Lamarr, James Stewart. But now Mr. Barrymore is taking his place at the head of the table, and we have a little round-robin greeting for him. Will you start it, Clark?
All right, Bob. Here goes. With friendship sincere and affection is true, we wish every happiness, Lionel, to you.
Now, Miss Russell.
Let me see. Oh, yes. Your great inspiration, your courage so fine, are a glimpse of the spark that in man is divine.
And Bob Montgomery.
My turn? Well, the friend of young actors, you've guided careers of countless beginners throughout the long years.
Mickey? Where's Mickey Rooney?
Well, here I am. You big guys keep crowding me out. This party's terrific. A genuine sensation. They're all joining in from all over the nation.
And this is where Miss Shearer comes in.
And I can hardly wait, Bob. Great soul and great artist and truly a friend. May yours be all the blessings that heaven can send.
Now, let's see. Who's next? Oh, it's me. Well, that's all there is. There isn't any more. But before we conclude, we'll join Leo and Roar.
Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday
to you. And now it is my honor to present our birthday party host, the head of this big MGM family, Mr. Louis B. Mayer.
Mr. Barrymore, ladies and gentlemen, what you said is true, Bob. This is a big family. We have been together, most of us, a very long while. As a matter of fact, it was just 15 years ago this week that we began here in this studio. It has become home to us. Among the very first artists to join our family was Lionel Barrymore, and believe me, I'm glad to have him still here. To the young generation, the name of Barrymore may lack the brilliant tradition it recalls to those of us within whose memory the royal family of the American theater, John, Ethel, and Lionel, will never be forgotten. Born and reared in the atmosphere of the stage, son of the great Maurice Barrymore and Georgia Drew, nephew of the greatest matinee idol of all time, John Drew, it is no wonder that Lionel made his acting debut at the age of five, just 56 years ago, and has never stopped working since. 30 years ago, Lionel made his first motion picture for T.W. Griffith. His numerous subsequent successes are well known. When most men pass the 60-year mark, they reach for their carpet slippers and slip back into the cushions of life's easy chair, but not Lionel Barrymore. Lionel, all the great stars, executives, and producers present in this room tonight are happy and proud of the fact that today you, who have created so many great characters on the stage and screen, should now stand on the threshold of one of the greatest character creations in your career. I am referring to your Dr. Gillespie in the picture Calling Dr. Kildare. When the first Dr. Kildare picture was reviewed by theater audiences, we received a great many letters of approval and commendation with the suggestion and hope that we would continue to produce more pictures of this nature. There has been great controversy as to what has made this first Kildare picture so successful, so talked about and written about. And I want to express in my humble opinion the reason. Because, Lionel, they deliver a great message, have a great philosophy, the same as the Judge Hardy pictures, which have become so internationally successful because they have a philosophy of family life, such as each and every one of us would like to experience. A great problem is that our universities have turned out yearly large numbers of young men and women, some with inspiring degrees of accomplishment, only to be brought up against a stone wall trying to get started on their careers. And Lionel, you don't fool your friends or your fans. They all know that your gruffness is all exterior and beneath it is the heart of gold. You live the character of Dr. Gillespie in real life with the young artists whom you've helped in starting and encouraging them in their careers. You did it for Clark Gable when he first started. You did it for Norma Shearer early in her career when she played with you in Free Soul, one of her greatest roles. You have done it with many others. And so the reason that Dr. Gillespie is a great character is not only because you have given it a great interpretation, but because it breathes hope that they too may find a Dr. Gillespie. And that is why, in my judgment, the Kildare pictures will enjoy great popularity. They will grow more popular as we continue. For as in the Judge Hardy series, they have the philosophies, the answer to the hopes and prayers of all mothers, fathers, sons, and daughters. Stop and think, Lionel. This young Dr. Kildare, played so ably by Lou Ayres, comes out of college with all great aspirations of youth. Instead of remaining as a small-town doctor to succeed his father, he went to the big city, full of high hope for what a stone wall he would have been up against if it had not been for your Dr. Gillespie. You know, Lionel, I want you to have a secret. Mr. Skink, who couldn't be here because of illness in the East, has asked me to tell you that he ordered that picture held back from release to time it with your birthday, and tomorrow it shall be released. There is much I could say on this your birthday, Lionel, but I must rest on what I feel and what we have meant to each other in all the years we have been associated. Actions speak louder than words, except that I want your friends here and outside the studio to know the great affection, the esteem in which you are held, from Nicholas M. Skink, the president of our company, straight through to the last man down the line. You deserve it. You have earned that affection. Somehow or other, Lionel, in the years that I have lived and my life has been a full one for which I am thankful, I have found that the old adage, as ye sow, so shall ye reap, holds true. You are now receiving the fruits of the rich seed you have spread everywhere. You have been an inspiration to all who have enjoyed the pleasure of knowing you and working with you. On behalf of Mr. Skink, and for every man, woman, over the world who belongs to our family, and on behalf of the great Maxwell House Coffee Organization, I wish and offer a prayer that you may have many, many more birthdays. You are too fine an artist, too fine a man, not to have many more years of fine service, valuable service. Your friends everywhere are waiting to hear from you. Lionel Barrymore.
Mr. Mayor, it's mighty hard for me to find the words to speak what's in my heart tonight. I never was much of a figure of speech-making anyway. But I do know that this is one of the happiest moments of my life, surrounded by my friends and honored as I never dared to dream. a tribute I shall always treasure. Friends, as you said, Mr. Mayor, are so priceless, especially when you begin to get along in years. I know they are to me, and I often pity the sad truth that so many of us don't find it out until it's too late. For like old wine, friendships mellow with age. But youth may be recaptured, even if but for a fleeting moment, and the recollections you share with those who have grown into your life through the warm bond of friendship. I'm happy to be able to say that I've found so many dear friendships here at this studio during the past 15 years. You've been kind enough to say that my interest has been helpful to some of the younger people. Everybody likes to give advice, and when we find somebody who listens, it tickles our vanity no end. So you see, there may be something selfish about it, after all. I'm deeply grateful to you, Mr. Mayor, and your associates who made it possible for me to be Dr. Gillespie in the Dr. Kildare pictures. I'm proud that I'm a member of the great motion picture industry, which brings a troubled world entertainment through which escape from cares may be found. And I'm proud, above all things, that I live in a country blessed with the freedom under which all these things are possible. Proud that I'm an American.
Well, that was grand, Lionel Barrymore. And now Meredith Wilson dedicates his concert hall selection to you. John Philip Sousa's stirring American march, Liberty Bell. Beginning tomorrow, your favorite motion picture theaters will be celebrating Lionel Barrymore Birthday Week. This in tribute to this great artist who appears with Lou Ayres in their latest MGM picture, Calling Dr. Kildare. You can participate in Lionel Barrymore's birthday celebration by attending your favorite motion picture theater and being royally entertained by this grand picture. And here's special good news. Tonight at the banquet, photographs are being made of Lionel Barrymore with all the other stars present. If you would like a photograph of Mr. Barrymore and these stars, MGM and the makers of Maxwell House Coffee make it possible for you to receive one of these pictures for 1 week only by simply writing to Maxwell House Coffee, MGM Studio, Culver City, California. And next week, a grand star-studded show with special guests Myrna Loy, Robert Taylor, and Connie Boswell. And, of course, your regulars Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, and yours truly, Bob Young, saying good night.
Daylight saving time goes into effect in many cities next week. If your community remains on standard time, this program will reach you an hour earlier than heretofore, commencing next week. This is Warren Hull saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.